Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Good evening and welcome to the UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement Theater and the first debate between incumbent Republican Congressman Sean Duffy and his challenger, former Democratic State Senator Pat Kreitlow. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio, which tonight is broadcasting this event on radio stations from Superior to Eau Claire to Wausau across the entire 7th Congressional District. Joining me on the panel and representing our other media sponsors are Robert Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald, Amy Pflugschild of WSAW-TV News Channel 7, and Melissa Langben of WAOW-TV Newsline 9. Thanks also to Eric Giordano of debate sponsor the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, and thanks to Rick Ryer, Jane Ritger, and Michael Leland of Wisconsin Public Radio, theater director Chris Berg, and our dean Keith Montgomery and the entire staff at UW Marathon County. Our format, questions will be directed by our panelists to an individual candidate who will have 90 seconds to respond, followed by a 90-second rebuttal from the second candidate. Each candidate has two challenge flags, which can be thrown following a rebuttal from the other candidate. When a flag is thrown, the candidate who threw it has an additional 30 seconds to rebut the rebuttal. So we go to Robert Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald for the first question, which is directed to Sean Duffy.
Thanks, Glenn. Thanks, gentlemen, for being here. Congressman, the situation in Libya, where a terrorist attack on September 11th killed our ambassador, has focused attention once again on the Middle East. President Obama has been roundly criticized by Republicans for his response to the attack on our embassy, but Democrats say that Governor Romney has surrounded himself with the same foreign policy advisors who led us into the Iraq War during the Bush administration. Congress has the constitutional responsibility to declare war, so what action will you take to ensure that if Governor Romney is elected, we don't send American troops to fight new wars in the Middle East?
And Sean Duffy has 90 seconds.
First of all, I want to thank the panel for being here today and all the work it took to come in and prepare for this debate. Mr. Kreitlow, good to be here with you as well. I do want to take a moment and just take a chance and wish my best friend and the mother of our six children, my wife, Rachel, a happy birthday. It's her birthday today. It's a great way for her to spend her birthday evening tonight, so happy birthday, honey. Listen, this is a serious issue. When we have a U.S. ambassador die, with what is a terrorist attack that was premeditated. Listen, I think it's a serious situation where we have to review the policy of this administration. And first and foremost, I think it's imperative that the administration be honest with the American people, because as more information trickles out, it becomes obvious that the administration knew before 14 days that this was not in regard to a video, or it wasn't just some spontaneous uprising. This was premeditated. And if it's premeditated, we should call it for what it is, and we should call it a terrorist attack. But in regard to sending U.S. troops into foreign lands, it has to be the last option for us. But I think what we have to be clear about is, you know, we have all this uprising in the Middle East. We have all this money in the Middle East because many of our U.S. dollars go to buy energy from the Middle East. This is a key opportunity for America to pivot to energy independence. Let's pursue American energy so we can keep more of those dollars here in America and less go over to the Middle East, where they oftentimes go to terrorists or people who don't like us very much and are used against U.S. citizens.
And Mr. Kreitlow, you've got 90 seconds.
Glenn, thanks very much, and thank you everybody for being here or for watching and listening in, and to the UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement as well. It's an honor to be part of this process and talking at first about something as serious as a tragedy that took four American lives on foreign soil, something that was a real setback in the push toward democracy in a part of the world that hadn't seen it for many, many years. And so one of the last things that we need to do in a situation like that is to play politics with our foreign policy. Whatever is next to your name, a D or an R or an I or a member of no party whatsoever, it is important that we look at the incident, at its merits, and take the time to find out what really happened, and not to engage in any kind of knee-jerk reactions that could, in the case of a hair trigger, lead to an undue commitment of young men and women before we know who's been the real perpetrator of an incident, and seek justice that way. I think back to my own first career in journalism, where there were many spot news situations that we were called out to and where people thought they knew what the facts were on the ground. But in fact, some good detective work needed to be done to find out what had really happened, what were the circumstances, and not to behave in a rash manner. We don't just have young men and women in uniform that are overseas. The Foreign Service, a lot of people who don't wear a formal uniform are there as well. They deserve protection. They deserve a good policy. We should not be going backward on helping bring democracy to Libya, but we do need all the facts before we proceed.
And the next question goes to Amy Flugsopt, and it will be directed to Pat Kreitler.
Mr. Kreitler, we're in the most anemic recovery since the Great Depression. There are 23 million people out of work, and unemployment is down at 7.8%, but that figure is still high. We are facing a $1 trillion deficit. How much of this is President Obama's fault, and why should we believe things will get better if we reelect him, also if we elect you and other Democrats to Congress?
It's a wonderful question, Amy, and one that has so many people frustrated, not just the people who are unemployed, but all the people who are underemployed, and those people who are watching the process that's played out in Washington over the past couple of years and can't figure out why there's not enough communication from one side of the aisle to the other, or across chambers, or up and down Pennsylvania Avenue. We know that job creation happens first here at home, not in Washington. But it's a lot easier for people at home to have an environment to create jobs if they feel like the people in Washington are on their side and not the side of a privileged few. Unfortunately, despite some very good ideas for job creation across this country, they haven't been adopted by this Congress. It's bogged down in games and gridlock. What we need to do going forward is make sure that tax relief and tax incentives don't go to the very top, but go to the middle class and go to the small businesses that create jobs in middle America. Let's make sure there are tax credits for small businesses who hire workers, who hire veterans, who provide health care coverage for their workers rather than push them onto government programs, who engage in research and development projects with a nearby tech college or university. None of these are my ideas, and none of them are necessarily Democratic or Republican ideas. They're good ideas that have been in the hopper of the House of Representatives for well over a year now. Good job-creating ideas. But because we have a Congress currently made up of people addicted to games and gridlock, the House is where good ideas have gone to die, and we need to move forward on job creation.
Yeah, Mr. Duffy, you've got 90 seconds.
Listen, I think it's important that we look to the private sector to create jobs, not to government. And there's some who believe that if you can grow and expand government, if government can spend more and borrow more, that'll create more jobs. That's not the way we go to create jobs, especially in the 7th District. Now, I believe there's a few simple things we have to do. One, we have to take the weight of all the regulations off the small businesses and all the manufacturers in this district so they can focus on what they do best, which is expand and grow and create jobs within their sector. We need to make a fair, flatter tax code, especially for our hardworking families, but also for those who are creating jobs in the 7th District. We need an energy policy that is going to create American energy, more jobs, more revenue to the federal coffers, but also bring down our energy costs for our families at the pump, but also for our manufacturers when they're making products. Listen, in the House, I voted for 30 or more jobs bills that look to the private sector to create jobs. Now, listen, Senator Kreitler will talk about a lot of different plans for you, and he can think of a brand new loophole that more small businesses have to jump through to get a tax break. I just say, let's lower them for all these businesses and let them do with that money what they will. It's theirs. But you talk about middle-class tax breaks. I have voted to keep all of these rates low. As a senator, Mr. Kretlow voted for the largest tax increase in Wisconsin history on middle-class families. And for every business that has an employee, he voted to raise taxes on every single one of those businesses for every employee. And for every new employee they hired, he wanted to tax them even more. This is on middle-class families. Those policies didn't work in Madison, and they won't work in Washington.
Well, since we've got this flag at the ready, let's use this and take 30 more seconds just to talk a bit about this topic, especially first on the notion that Congressman Duffy has sent something like 30 bills to the Senate that were jobs-related. No, they weren't. They were 30 more bills that would cut taxes at the very top, not the thing that's going to add jobs. The Bush tax cuts have added $1.6 trillion to the national debt over the past decade. Where are the jobs for that? And the only place he's really fought regulations have been the regulation of Wall Street banks. And as a result, he's collected nearly $750,000 from special interests tied to banks, credit card companies, and oil companies, and he's not working for us.
And the next question goes to Sean Duffy from Melissa Langdon.
Thank you, Glenn, and thanks to the audience for showing up tonight as well as our candidates. The Simpson-Bowles Deficit Reduction Plan calls for a balanced approach of spending cuts and also new tax revenue. But you have your hands tied because you signed Grover Norquist's pledge to not raise taxes under any circumstances. Why would you sign a pledge like that to someone who does not live in the 7th Congressional District? And then please respond to the critics who say you can't fix the debt without new tax revenue.
That's a good question, Melissa. Thank you. First, I want to take a moment and go back to the 30 jobs bills included things like Boiler Mac, increasing the standards on industrial boilers that's going to kill Wisconsin paper. Bills that will take all the rules and regulations, or most of the rules and regulations, off of our small community banks and credit unions that can't get dollars out the door to our small businesses to create jobs. There's 30 bills like that that Senator Coelho doesn't support. But in regard to tax reform, I think it's a good one. Since I've run for office, I've been very clear. I believe that raising taxes, especially on our small businesses, doesn't create jobs. This is the position of Bill Clinton. Barack Obama 2 years ago agreed with the point that if you raise taxes, especially in a down economy, it doesn't create jobs. But my commitment has been to the American, to the folks of the 7th District that I don't think raising these taxes is one that will create jobs and opportunity. Listen, the way you pay off the debt is you grow the economy. You put more people back to work. And when more people are working, you have more people paying taxes. And right now, I think in this down economy, it doesn't make sense that we would go to a place where you increase taxes on the very people who are looking at creating jobs. We have Mr. Coelho who talks about saying, listen, I want to raise taxes on the millionaires and billionaires. Listen, the taxes he talks about are taxes that will hit the job creators in this district, the small businesses and the manufacturers. And it's the very tax increase proposals that he voted for in Madison that would have hit every middle-class worker and every small business.
And Pat Freitel, you have 90 seconds for a rebuttal.
You know, the question was on the deficit and the national debt. And it's true. It is a big problem, one that threatens to really choke our economy and the future of our children and my grandson. It is a $16 trillion monument that you can't see in Washington, but it is a monument to the failure of both parties. Both parties created this problem over the past decade or so, and not nearly enough has been done about it by this current Congress. Again, there's not just Democratic or Republican ideas, just good ideas to cut the wasteful spending. The GAO identified hundreds of millions of dollars in redundant spending that could be cut. We could let Medicare negotiate with the drug companies finally and save taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars on drug prices. We could take care of a defense budget that's being porked up by members of Congress who are taking care of their home district. And last year when Simpson-Bowles was faltering, we could have had a bipartisan package that cut the debt by $4 trillion. It didn't pass because we're represented by a congressman who stood in the way of it. For the same reason that he stood in the way of middle-class tax relief. We could have had tax relief for 98% of American families, but he wanted 100% and held the rest of us hostage to protect every dime of tax breaks for the top 1%, for companies that outsource our jobs, and for oil companies. Believe me, we don't need a congressman who's signing a pledge to any one person or passing a series of continuing resolutions because they couldn't get the job done. We need bipartisan balancing of the budget, not on the backs of the middle class, but the right way.
I'll use mine.
And Sean Duffy has dropped his challenge flag. You've got 30 seconds.
There we go. Get the appropriate way. Listen, it's important to note that President Obama talked about $4 trillion in cuts, but he gave a speech. We tried to get it scored by the CBO. They couldn't score a speech. But after that, he put out a budget that Senator Coelho talked about. But the truth is, not one Democrat in the Senate or the House voted for it. But when you talk about deficits and budget and debts, Senator Coelho, when he was a senator, left us with the largest tax increases, the most spending, but also the largest debts in Wisconsin history, largest deficits in Wisconsin history. If he didn't do it in Madison, he can't do it in Washington.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
You are listening to the 7th District Congressional Debate between Republican Sean Duffy and Democrat Pat Freitel. Our next question comes from Rob Mensah of the Daily Herald for Pat Freitel.
You alluded to your support for the Dodd-Frank banking reform bill, and your opponent has accused you of favoring new bailouts for Wall Street because of your support for that reform. Is it true, as the campaign ad states, that the plan props up reckless big banks with taxpayer dollars?
The issue of Dodd-Frank and Wall Street reform is important to people because, again, if we don't get the lending community together and feel confident about the market, small businesses are not going to be able to access the capital they need to grow, to expand, and to add jobs. Unfortunately, the actions of this Congress and our current congressman have put taxpayers closer to having to bail out some of the big Wall Street banks as he's fought to basically take the refs off the field, take the cops off the beat. If there's one thing most of us in this room have learned over the past few years, Wall Street cannot police itself. Now, Dodd-Frank was a far from perfect bill. Both parties managed to water it down and render it much less effective than most of you wanted to see after the crash of 2008. But what we don't need to do is go back to a system where the big banks get to treat our mortgages and retirement accounts like casino chips. That's what crashed this economy. And instead, we have a congressman who's done the bidding for these banks with no prior experience sitting on the Financial Services Committee. He's done exactly what they've wanted him to do. And as a result, has collected $750,000 in contributions from banks, credit card companies, insurance companies, real estate firms, and oil and natural gas companies. All of the attack ads that you're seeing out there right now are from somebody working for Wall Street, being propped up by Wall Street, fighting reform of Wall Street. We deserve better than that in Washington.
And Sean Duffy, you have
90
seconds.
Mr. Crandall, that's just not true. Let's talk about what Dodd-Frank does. We had a financial crisis in 2008, and we needed to have reforms targeted to fix what happened in that crisis. But Dodd-Frank was a massive bill that did far more than just target the problems from the crisis. One of the things that it does is Dodd-Frank picks winners and losers. It identifies banks that are so big that if they fail, they're going to ask every taxpayer in Wausau, Wisconsin, and America to bail them out. I'm sick of taxpayers being forced to bail out big banks that aren't responsible with their investments. And Pat Kretlow supports those big bailouts of Wall Street banks because he supports Dodd-Frank. But what's important is the support that I've received from community banks in Wisconsin and credit unions. The bottom line is they have been just smothered with all of these new rules and regulations. And if you've bought a house or a car or you've looked for a business loan or you know someone who has gone to the bank, you want to pull your hair out because of all of these new rules and regulations. And it's those rules and regulations on our small community banks, our credit unions, the ones that had nothing to do with the financial crisis. It's those rules and regulations I'm trying to peel back. Because if our small community banks and credit unions don't work in Wisconsin, we can't get capital out the door to the small main streets all around this district. And if you can't get capital out, you don't buy cars, you don't buy houses, and you can't get money into the hands of the small business owners that want to expand, grow, and create more jobs for everyone here in central and northern Wisconsin.
Well, let's follow up on that because that is very important to note. What did Dodd-Frank do? Who was it tilted toward? It was not tilted toward or written for the community lenders around middle America that played by the rules. It was written for Wall Street, and it's being undermined by people who are working for Wall Street now. Just 7 days after getting a campaign contribution from J.P. Morgan, Congressman Duffy co-authored a letter to regulators asking them to water down or delay some of the regulations that were being proposed that would allow for some of the practices that took place leading up to the crash of 2008. That's the wrong priority to have for the lenders of Wisconsin.
And, Pat Kretlow, you have used up both of your challenge flags. Sean Duffy, you still have one. Our next question comes from Amy Flugsopt for Sean Duffy. Amy.
Congressman Duffy, your opponent continues to say that you voted twice to end Medicare by turning it into an optional voucher program for those under 55.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Your opponent continues to say that you voted twice to end Medicare by turning it into an optional voucher program for those under 55, which would make seniors pay thousands more for their health care. Are those criticisms first valid? And why do you want to make significant structural changes to a popular program that millions of seniors rely on?
Yeah, this is an important question. We hear a lot of ads about this very issue. The bottom line is we had the largest health care reform in American history with Obamacare, with PPACA, and with all this massive reform, all these new taxes, we still have Medicare going broke in 10 years, per the Congressional Budget Office, but the Medicare trustees say it's going broke in 12 years. If you care about Medicare, when they wrote that bill, they should have made sure they secure and save Medicare, not jeopardize it. What I believe is this. It shouldn't go broke. What I believe is if you're 55 or older, you get traditional Medicare. If you're 54 or younger, we'll give you an option. You can pick traditional Medicare, or you can pick premium support, where you get support from the government, and you can pick a plan that works for you. But the biggest issue that I see with Medicare and jeopardizing the longevity of Medicare is the fact that Senator Quayle supports a plan that will, quote, save money in Medicare. And they do that by reducing payments to doctors, hospitals, and clinics. Right here in central Wisconsin, they'll reduce the payments for our current seniors. And if they save that $716 billion, he wants to use it for a piggy bank to help fund Obamacare. Listen, our seniors paid for their Medicare. They deserve to get it. And I think the first thing we should do in Congress and in Washington is figure out how we keep Medicare viable and solvent for seniors before you make another and a new promise to more people. That's my priority. Senator Kreitlow and his plans have missed the mark, and they are focusing on a different set of people and not fixing Medicare.
Pat Kreitlow, you have 90 seconds.
Boy, I wish we could bring Bill Clinton out here to use that famous line again, that it takes a lot of brass to criticize somebody for something that you voted for. It was Congressman Duffy who voted for the Ryan budget that included that same $718 billion in savings from Medicare. It was the one thing he did right on the program, because what had been identified by experts already were overpayments to insurance companies and to big pharmaceutical companies. Savings for taxpayers that do nothing to jeopardize patient care, because it was wasted money that was not going to direct patient care. And then it was Congressman Duffy, through the Ryan budget, that turned that into a piggy bank. Instead of having that savings applied toward improving health care for the rest of the country, that money he voted to provide more tax cuts to millionaires. Again, the wrong direction on what to do when you actually identify savings in our health care field. He went on to do, essentially, the ending of Medicare as we know it by turning it into a coupon program where seniors would get that voucher that does not keep up with health care costs. Instead, he also voted 30 times to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which means that 30 times not only did he break his promise to voters from the 2010 campaign, but it means 29 times he wasted our time. We already know that voting to repeal would open up the donut hole. So it's not that seniors would wait 10 years for Congressman Duffy to charge them more out of their pocket. Seniors would start paying thousands more out of pocket right away once that donut hole gets reopened once again. We do need to make Medicare more solvent the right way.
I'll do a challenge.
And Sean Duffy has used his final challenge play.
Listen, we've had independent fact checkers come out and say it was the lie of the year, this any Medicare as you know it, that Senator Quayle claims. The $6,400 that he claims were taken out of Medicare, that's a lie, and it's been claimed by the fact checkers. But Senator Quayle and his plan is the only plan that has Medicare ending. It's going broke under his proposal. It's not solved. It's not solvent. It's going broke. But let's talk the $716 billion in savings. If you can save $716 billion, let's keep it in Medicare. Let's shore up the Medicare program. He's voted to take the money out of Medicare and use it for Obamacare, using it for someone else. That's the wrong approach.
And our next question comes from Melissa Langman for Pat Kreitlow.
We're sort of in this arena right now, so we'll continue on with this question that expands upon the one that you've just been talking about. A large part of the federal budget is spending on Medicare and also Social Security. Both programs, of course, are getting more and more expensive. How can we get a handle on the federal deficit without changing them? Doesn't it make sense to look at some degree of privatization by giving future seniors the option of buying private insurance through Medicare and the option of investing their Social Security payroll taxes in stocks and also mutual funds?
One of the last things we need to do is break our promise to America's workers and to American seniors that we make through Social Security and Medicare that says if you give us the best working years of your life and pay into a system, it will be there to provide you with a retirement with dignity, free from poverty and free from bankruptcy that would come because of health care costs. There are right ways that you address some of the shortcomings in Social Security and Medicare. It's been done in years past, where members of both parties have come together to do the things necessary rather than simply demagogue the issue and put off any kinds of solutions to them. Unfortunately, you know, Congressman Duffy's voted for two different things on Medicare that go in the wrong direction. Now, he criticized the $6,400 figure, but that figure was correct from the 2011 version of the Ryan budget. He says, well, look at the 2012 vote instead. That's the more updated one. Well, first off, the $6,400 figure, more money out of seniors' pockets, that was one of the first votes you took. It shows where your priorities are. But even worse, in the 2012 version of the Ryan budget, where he says, well, we'll keep Medicare around as an option along with the private plans, that's essentially cherry-picking. That's exactly what the insurance industry is doing to every one of us right now, cherry-picking out the healthy and the wealthy. If you go with the scheme that Congressman Duffy voted for in the 2012 Ryan budget, you'll still have Medicare, but with all these other plans cherry-picking out the healthiest of seniors, we know that those that have to stay behind are going to see their costs go up either out of their pocket and or for taxpayers. And that's the wrong way to go.
And Sean Duffy, you have 90 seconds for a rebuttal.
Mr. Carlo talks about not breaking promises to seniors. But the truth is, under Obamacare, the plan that he supports, Medicare's going broke. I think it's important that if you're going to have a massive new program in health care, you should first, the first priority, make sure you preserve and protect Medicare for your seniors. But instead, because they have the program going broke, we've had to put out ideas that actually make it solvent. And what we do is, let's be very clear. Again, 55 or older, it's pre-Obamacare Medicare. You get exactly what you bargained for without the $716 billion and without the reductions in payments on your care. If you're 54 or younger, when you get to the age of retirement, you'll have a choice. First, you can stay on traditional Medicare, or you can go into premium support. And the poorer you are and the sicker you are, the more support you get, and you can pick pre-approved plans in Medicare. If you're wealthier and healthier, if you're Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, who's very wealthy, you'll get very little support. But by doing this, we're able to save Medicare for this future generation of retirees. It's important that we look at real ideas, put them on the table to save it. But the other ideas that have come from Senator Kretlow have the plan, the program, going broke. In regard to Social Security, I'm not one who believes you want to privatize it. I think there's a lot of different ways that we can shore up Social Security. Again, I think the one way that you do it is this. You say those who are 55 or older, again, get traditional payments in Social Security. Those who are, I'm sorry, the time is up.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, adapting renewable energy and wood heat solutions to meet the needs of homes, farms, and business. Information at northwindre.com.
I'm Glenn Milberg. You're listening to the 7th Congressional District debate between Republican Sean Duffy and Democrat Pat Kreitlow. We go to Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald with a question for Sean Duffy.
Congressman, you voted to repeal the president's health care reform law more than once, despite your campaign pledge not to do so, unless Republicans had a replacement plan either in place or ready to go. In fact, no Republican replacement plan, including the bill that you introduced, has made real progress in Congress. Can you credibly claim at this point that Republicans have a replacement plan that will pass, that doesn't leave us at this old status quo of 50 million uninsured, Medicare Part D donut hole, and no coverage for people with pre-existing conditions?
Well, first of all, when I ran, I talked about reforming the reform or repealing and replacing. When I got out there to Congress, I saw on either side, no one was interested in reforming the reform, so I'm stuck with repealing and replacing. But to take a moment again and talk about some of the things in Obamacare, all the taxes that are involved in this new bill, just to talk about one, they had a 1099 requirement, where every small business, if you buy, say, a computer from the computer company down the store and you spend $600, every $600 you spend, you have to send a 1099 to the IRS. You'd be sending 1099s documents to the IRS all day long. And that's why under this plan, they proposed hiring thousands of new IRS agents. I want the small businesses here to focus on their business, not on sending forms to the IRS. But they also had a medical device tax. So if you need a stent or a new hip, or if your kids need braces, they want to raise taxes on medical devices. And we have a lot of medical device makers in this district. This would cost jobs and it increased costs. Again, Rob, also, the president told us that with this health care reform bill, we would see prices for the average family by the end of his first term go down by an average of $2,500 per year. They've actually gone up by $3,000 per year. Prices are going up. I believe in a plan, and what's my plan is, it is competition across state lines, is price transparency, getting rid of junk lawsuits, reforming Medicare in a way that's going to make it work, but also making sure those with pre-existing conditions can get coverage and care, and my time is up.
And Pat Kreitel, you have 90 seconds.
When we talk about the Affordable Care Act or just health care reform overall, what we haven't really heard here is how do we move the issue forward? That's what's been sorely lacking in this Congress. We've seen the same debate happen over and over again with 30 votes, 29 of them wasting our time and our tax dollars for a Congress that's in session to go into essentially summer reruns. We need to look at the things that are working or can work and why we adopted them in the first place. And I use the example of growing up in a family with a little brother who was sick all of his life with heart surgeries and other things that eventually led him to pass away at the age of 9. I was 14. He would have hit a lifetime cap from a private insurance company long before he got to his 9th birthday. The Affordable Care Act made sure, as the president likes to say, insurance companies can't jerk you around anymore. It also helped close up the donut hole for seniors that the congressman apparently wants to reopen. Again, seniors who haven't done anything wrong, they've worked all their lives. They just want to make sure that they don't have to choose between their drugs or their groceries. In playing into the usual games and gridlock out in Washington and not moving forward on a health care solution, but instead wanting to put the insurance companies back in the driver's seat of your health care, the congressman's received over $120,000 in campaign contributions from the insurance industry. That's wrong for our families, and it doesn't do anything to move us forward in the next step, which is bending the cost curve so that we don't see such medical inflation. Pay for quality outcomes instead of quantity of tests and procedures. Let's have that discussion next.
And the next question comes from Amy Flugsopt of News Channel 7 for Pat Kreitel.
Mr. Kreitel, as a state senator, you supported Healthy Wisconsin, a universal health care plan that was ultimately deemed too liberal and too expensive, even for Democratic Governor Jim Doyle. What does your support of this program signal about the types of legislation you'd support as a congressman?
What it signaled back in 2007 was that after years, decades of small business owners and family members saying, when are we going to have elected leaders take the issue of health care seriously? We did. Traveled around the state, listened to people who were saying, why is the field so tilted toward one side or the other? How do we make sure that the health care security that we so need in this country can actually come to fruition? And so steps were taken and a plan was written, a plan that ultimately didn't pass, but a plan that got a lot of people's attention because they once again had people who were listening to them. And a lot of those elements moved forward in the debate over the Affordable Care Act, again, after decades of inaction. Now, unfortunately, again, we have politicians in Washington that want to simply pretend the past couple of years never happened, as if that's somehow going to get rid of the problem of escalating health care costs. The families who don't have health insurance right now or can't afford the premiums because they're skyrocketing, or the small businesses that want their workers to be covered. They don't want as many sick days, but they can't afford it because of insurance company games and the contributions they make to politicians. And so, again, it's important to say, what do we do next? Let's again have elected leaders who are listening to the small businesses in their district, listening to the families of their district, and saying, what are the things that we can do, pay for them fairly, that will help our economy and help our health.
And Sean Duffy, you have 90 seconds.
Senator Kreitel, because you weren't listening to your constituents and you voted for the largest tax increase in Wisconsin history, they voted you out of office. I believe it's important to listen to people. And I understand that this plan that he voted for was the largest tax increase in Wisconsin history. If you get a salary, if you get a paycheck, he wanted to basically give you an income tax of 4%. If you're a small business, for every employee, every paycheck you pay an employee, he wanted to raise the taxes on that small business by 10%. This was a job-crushing bill. Small businesses were screaming, no, don't vote for it. And he voted for it anyway. And here today he comes in and says, I want you all to believe that I only want to raise taxes on millionaires and billionaires. But he has a clear and concise record as a senator where he voted for the largest tax increase in Wisconsin history, and it wasn't on millionaires and billionaires. It was on every hard-working middle-class family in the 7th District, would have borne it. And for every small business and every manufacturer and every farmer, they all would have had a tax increase under this plan. Not only that, if you own a car, you would have got a tax increase. If you go to the hospital, tax increase for that. He allowed a tax increase when you sell your house and allowed your property taxes to go up as well. And these are all taxes that hit middle-class families. So when he tells you, I only want to raise taxes on middle-class American or upper-class Americans, that's not what he did in the Senate. He raised taxes on every middle-class and lower-income earner in the state.
And our next question comes from Melissa Langbin of Newsline 9 for Sean Duffy. Melissa?
You have stated that you are 100% pro-life. Are you willing to make exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother as Mitt Romney does? Do you want to eliminate funding for Planned Parenthood? And do you agree with Congressman Paul Ryan's Sanctity of Human Life Act, which would have given embryos constitutional rights from the moment of fertilization?
Listen, this is a difficult issue. And there's a lot of people that fall on different sides of this issue. And it can be a point of division and contention within our society and our community. For me, I believe that life begins at conception, and it goes until natural death. And I believe that we protect life at conception. I'm a Catholic. My faith teaches me that, and so too does my view of the world. But listen, I think it's important that we make sure we respect people with other views and other ideas, and I'm one who does respect those different ideas, but I'm not afraid to put my view on the table. In regard to Planned Parenthood, you know, listen, Planned Parenthood offers a lot of procedures and checkups and care for a lot of women, and I think a lot of that care is really good, and especially for folks who can't afford it. But the contention that has come around Planned Parenthood is that they're the largest abortion provider in the country. And so they are able to take taxpayer funds to then, in essence, use for abortion. And I think this issue could be resolved completely if Planned Parenthood stopped doing abortions. There would be no issue with funding on Planned Parenthood. So I think it's a pretty easy issue to resolve to make sure women continue to get care and coverage for procedures that they need. I think it's an important part of our society. For me, I have a family that's very diverse. I have 5 brothers and 5 sisters. My 5 sisters don't always agree with me. I have 4 daughters, and I think it's important to make sure that we have policies in place that take care of those in need, especially those for women.
And Pat Kreidel, you have 90 seconds.
Congressman Duffy, you talked about respecting our ideas. I believe we need a congressman who will respect women and make sure that they don't face government coming between them and their doctor, or facing the specter of not getting equal pay for equal work. Battles that women are still fighting today in 2012. And it's a distraction at times that some politicians want to do to play on camera because they don't have any real solutions for issues that affect women, like creating more jobs in this economy, making sure their children can afford an education or afford health care, and so forth. But instead, we're having these same debates about whether women can be respected throughout society. I have a wife who's a physician and who occasionally does mission trips. Done them in Mexico, Haiti, and this year was in Africa. Went to 3 different villages in Kenya and Uganda, working with midwives and nurses, working with women who'd walk from faraway villages because they couldn't get health care otherwise. No running water, no electricity. She came home from these third world countries at the end of February. Do you remember what we were debating in this country at the end of February? Whether women could get basic health care and have it be covered. We deserve better than that debate here in the United States. And we don't deserve to have a congressman who one of the first bills he signed on to would redefine rape. We don't need that. We need to move forward on things that help women and families.
I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. You are listening to the 7th Congressional District debate between Republican Sean Duffy and Democrat Pat Kreidel. Our next question comes from Robert Mincer of the Wausau Daily Herald for Pat Kreidel.
Last winter's record warm temperatures hurt the Northwoods tourist economy, and this summer's drought has hurt our farmers. A number of scientists point to global climate change as a contributing factor. Do you agree? And if you do, does it mean that we should reduce our use of coal and oil and instead pursue more green energy alternatives? How does the question affect your view of the Keystone Pipeline and additional oil drilling?
Oh, we've got a lot of things there. Hang on. Let me get the list ready. All right. I come at this from the standpoint of somebody who in the Boy Scouts believed that you always left your campsite in better shape than you found it. You leave the planet in a better place than when you found it, whether you're passing it on to your children or to your grandchildren. In this state and in this part of the state, we have been proud to have a healthy industrial sector and at the same time protect the air, the land, and the water, because the air, the land, and the water, those are jobs too. They help sustain a tourism economy, and they help bring people here who want to live and work and raise a family in Wisconsin. We need to strike the right balance. And so a couple of years back, when the EPA had out a cap-and-trade proposal, I was very vocal about standing with congressional Democrats and Republicans who slowed that down because the proposal would have punished Midwestern utilities and factories at the expense of the economies on the East and West Coasts. We do need to make sure that our factories are able to have access to capital to do retrofits where needed, to reduce emissions over time so that those factories can continue to stay modern and employ people here. The answer is not to throw the rule book in the wood chipper, or as Congressman Duffy would do, is to do the bidding of the oil and natural gas companies that have contributed $50,000 to his campaign already. We need that Keystone Pipeline built the right way, in a way that protects American jobs, that it's built with American labor, that it doesn't become a ticking time bomb to the environment, and that that North American oil actually goes to North America rather than being shipped off to Europe, China, or India. Congressman Duffy had opportunities to vote that way, and he voted no.
And Sean Duffy, you have 90 seconds.
I'll get back to that question 1 second. I want to go back to the last question quickly, though. Mr. Crail, you're supported by NARAL, which is the most radical pro-abortion group in the country. They support late-term abortions and partial birth abortions. Frankly, I think that's disgusting. You want to talk about rape? Listen, as a prosecutor, I prosecuted rape cases. I heard the stories of women and children who had been raped. And as I was working to put those rapists behind bars, you might have read a teleprompter to tell the people in your community about it. So don't talk to me about rape. Now listen, in regard to global warming, listen, I believe that we need to be respectful of the environment. Just the same as we have an issue where we want to pass off a strong economy to the next generation, we want to make sure we pass off a strong and healthy environment. We live here because we like the environment. We like to bike, ski, snowmobile, swim. And so I think it's important that we would be responsible and respectful of the environment. But my concern is if we have overburdensome rules and regulations that inhibit our small businesses from growing and expanding, and it makes it more expensive for our small businesses, that means that more of our jobs and our companies and our businesses are shipped overseas. And that causes great pain within our society. So I think there is a sound balance between having a respectful policy in regard to the environment, but also policies that encourage job growth and job creation and innovation right here in the rural part of the country.
And our next question comes from Amy Flugsopt of News Channel 7 for Sean Duffy. Amy.
Congressman Duffy, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Wisconsin lost 500 farms last year. Many of these farmers rely on subsidies to help make ends meet, especially this year after a devastating drought. The bill also provides funding for food stamps, school lunches, and rural development funds. But the Farm Bill expired this month because Republicans couldn't get enough votes to pass a new law. If the Farm Bill is a priority, why hasn't it passed?
So that's a very good question. It is a priority. Listen, ag and farming is a huge part of our economy and our job growth here. And with this Farm Bill not being extended, there's a real issue with payments going to our farmers to make sure that they have the resources in the milk program. But let's be honest, the farm portion of the bill is 20%. That's not the problem. The 80% holdup is the food stamp portion. And it's a bipartisan group of members of Congress who believe we should pass the bill as is. And I'm one of those. I've worked with Ron Kind and others. We signed a letter that said, move the bill. But the problem is we don't have enough votes by Democrats and Republicans because they can't agree on the food stamp portion of the Farm Bill. And you might ask, why? Why can't they agree? Well, Republicans think that food stamps and the program is there to help those who fall on hard times. It's a way to reach down and offer a helping hand up in a difficult time in your life. But Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, and others have said that food stamps are a great way to grow the economy. If you spend more on food stamps, you'll see economic growth. So there's a disagreement on that. Over the last 4 years, food stamps have grown by 100%. So what we say is, listen, let's go back to the traditional formula for food stamps, and if we did that, we could get an agreement. But that's the holdup. But I've been talking to Speaker Boehner and Eric Cantor every day in their offices, on the floor, making sure they know how important it is to pass this bill and how important it is to our economy. I'm going to continue to work to make that happen until we get the bill passed.
Yeah, Pat, right. Well, you have 90 seconds.
As a kid who used to wait in line with his mom for food stamps when we fell in tough times, I tell the congressman, walk a mile in my shoes or the shoes of many families out there who have fallen on tough times recently because our government is so broken and helped crash the economy. But that's not the larger picture of why there isn't a farm bill. There isn't a farm bill because of congressmen like Mr. Duffy in the House of Representatives who didn't take action for the hundreds of farms that generate thousands of jobs just in Marathon County and add millions of dollars to the local economy. He's been nearly invisible on this issue in such a dairy-intensive district. He says the votes aren't there. The votes were there, overwhelmingly there. The Farm Bill passed the Senate with a majority of Republicans voting for it, as well as a majority of Democrats. But it came to the House of Representatives, and Congressman Duffy had a chance to sign a discharge petition calling for that bill to be brought up for a vote. And he was strangely silent on it, choosing to play politics instead. Now, crop farmers can wait till next spring before they start planting again and hope that there's a farm bill. Dairy farmers don't take a day off. I'm married into a dairy farm family. The cows don't come with you to the beach because you don't get to go to the beach. The work's got to be done every day, and the milk income loss contract safety net is gone now because of the House of Representatives. Again, our farmers need bipartisan action. I worked in a bipartisan fashion to save a rural jobs program for rural businesses and farms that wanted to grow. We need that kind of bipartisan action for our rural economy once again with a real rural voice in Washington.
And our next question comes from Melissa Langben of Newsline 9 for Pat Kripo.
One conservative argument on immigration is enforcement first. That is the idea that the federal government's first job is to establish that it can actually close the border and then enforce existing immigration law. And then and only then will it make sense to talk about the path to citizenship for those who are already here. Do you agree or disagree? And if you support the DREAM Act, does that risk making our country even more of a magnet for illegal immigration?
Comprehensive immigration reform is, again, one of those ideas that has been brought up by both Republicans as well as Democrats who recognize that comprehensive legal immigration reform is something that's going to be beneficial to our economy, whether you're talking high-tech jobs in some sectors or the people who are milking our cows right here in central Wisconsin. But it's got to be done fairly, and it's got to be done in a way that you can actually implement. And again, there have been ideas out there, but too many politicians want to play games with the subject of immigration, pose in front of the TV cameras, talk about building a wall and shipping them all back, as if that wouldn't blow an even bigger hole in the deficit than it would to have a right path towards citizenship for some who've been playing by the rules, and certainly not deporting a high school senior who's getting A's and B's out of the only country that she or he has ever known. We need to return to something that Ronald Reagan tried to do back in the mid-'80s with immigration reform. Put the onus on the employer through E-Verify to make sure that we don't have businesses who aren't playing by the rules, taking advantage of low-wage illegal labor and getting an unfair leg up on businesses around here that do play by the rules. It's a very important issue, one that's been ignored in Washington for too long because, again, too many people on both sides of the aisle just don't want to sit down and take problems like this seriously and give them the attention they deserve.
Sean Duffy, you have 90 seconds.
Thank you. I'm going to slide back for a few moments on the last question, and I'll move on to immigration. Senator Kreitlow talks about bipartisanship, but as a state senator for 4 years, he had a voting record that was 99% with the administration. This was a partisan to the 99th percentile. In regard to our farmers, I'm proud to have the endorsement of the Farm Bureau, the Dairy Business Association, the corn growers. All these folks know how hard I'm working on dairy to make sure we pass these, pass this farm bill and make sure our farms are protected. So I have their endorsement, and I'm proud of that endorsement. In regard to immigration, listen, I think first and foremost, we are a country of immigrants, and we're also a country of laws. And I think it's important to address this problem first by saying we should secure the border. One, that stops those who want to come in to work illegally, but also those who are running guns or drugs or human beings, or the next dirty bomb is going to come across the border, or come across the southern border. I think we have to secure the border first, and once we get near full employment, then we look at allowing people in to come and fill the jobs that we have here in America, but do it in the sunlight, in the daylight, and have them come legally. In regard to the DREAM Act, I think it's important to note that Senator Marco Rubio was working on a policy just like this, but for political purposes, the president stepped in with an executive order that only gave a 2-year reprieve on the DREAM Act. We could have had a long-term bipartisan solution instead of a political one in this election cycle. Another thing that's important is to make sure that people who get an education in America from other countries should be able to come and stay in America with a visa, so we have the brightest minds that were educated here, staying here, innovating here, and creating jobs here.
I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the 7th Congressional District debate between Republican Sean Duffy and Democrat Pat Kreitlow. I have the last two questions, and this one is directed at Sean Duffy. What is your view of race to the top, and what other steps are needed on education from the federal level? Should the federal government be involved in education, or is this something that is best left to the states and local communities?
That's a very good question. Education is important. All the things we talk about here, I think, pale in comparison to if you don't educate the next generation, we've let our forefathers down. I'm one who understands the importance of having resources. A lot of it will come from the federal side and the state side. But I think having all these rules and regulations from bureaucrats in Washington is not the right approach. I think we want to take away a lot of the strings with the money that comes and empower not only our states but our communities and our families to do what's best for their kids within their school districts. Because I can tell you that the bureaucrats in Washington don't know what's best for your kids. And what's best for Kansas or Kentucky is not necessarily best for Wisconsin or here in Wausau. So I think empowering the communities to do what's right to educate their kids is important. But it's also important, once our kids get an education, that they're able to move on to a good-paying job. And right now, when our kids are getting out of school, 50% of them can't find work, because this has been one of the longest and lamest recoveries since the Great Depression. And again, you have folks who are looking to the federal government to spend more, borrow more, give us bigger deficits, and think that'll create jobs. That doesn't. It comes from the private sector. I want to make sure when our kids get a good education, they're able to come out and get a good paying job. I want to say one more thing about our teachers. They're hardworking. I have a father-in-law, a sister-in-law, and two sisters who teach. Oftentimes it's thankless. And a key to a strong education is a strong group of teachers who can inspire and educate our young.
And Pat Kreitlow, you have 90 seconds.
I think that if the congressman were serious about wanting to have a commitment to education, he wouldn't vote for something that, like the Ryan budget, that not only increases taxes on middle-class families, but also slashes Pell Grants. And that's not just some vague nationwide notion. Right here in Wisconsin, tens of thousands of Pell Grants, fewer Pell Grants, would be rewarded to hardworking kids from families that don't have parents with a big bank account. If he were serious about education and jobs, he wouldn't have slashed training through the Workforce Investment Act that goes to our job centers to help people with education and retraining, and instead holding a job fair, putting his name on it, at the same job centers where he's cutting funding for them. We need, in terms of education reform, to continue the path that we've started on, which is not teaching to the test. You're not going to solve this through bubble testing. You're going to need a community collaboration where teachers, for example, are evaluated not just through bubble tests, but by their peers and their principals and the parents in the community as well. That's why I like the idea of using states as laboratories to find those good ideas. You're going to find many of them right here in Wisconsin. They're not all going to be at a charter school. They may be at a magnet school, or they may be right down the street. But only if we, again, have very inclusive talks about reform, rather than vilifying education the way that, unfortunately, we've done in the state. My grandson's probably got a pretty good kindergarten teacher right now, but as the current teachers retire, I really worry and wonder if our best and brightest are going to be going into teaching to be there for him by the time he gets to high school. We need a recommitment that education is the best economic development program of the future.
We've got one final question. We are running short on time, so Jane, clock them down to 45 seconds. You have 45 seconds each on this.
We are at the
height of the political season. No one can turn on their TV and listen to the radio without hearing attack ads. People say they're sick of them. Also, as a result of the Supreme Court Citizens United decision, corporations can pour essentially unlimited amounts of money into election coffers. Why do the two of you and your supporters run negative ads, and do you favor a constitutional amendment that would take super PAC money out of campaigns? Pat Kreitlow and then Sean Duffy.
Citizens Action has been a real impediment to the future of elections that our voters will have faith in by essentially just opening up the gates to unlimited funds from all kinds of anonymous sources. And you're seeing that already in this campaign. You weren't just seeing slick taxpayer-funded mailings by Congressman Duffy talking about his record or perhaps giving it a certain degree of spin, but you were seeing slick mailings coming in that were paid for by the pharmaceutical industry and by drug companies as well to try to mislead people about what the congressman wants to do to partially privatize Medicare. We need campaign finance reform. I was a champion of it in the legislature. Right now we have a congressman who is number two in receiving corporate PAC donations. That's what's funding the negative ads you're seeing out there. We need that constitutional amendment. He talks a good game, but he hasn't put his name on any legislation that has a chance of passing yet.
And Sean Duffy, you have 45 seconds.
Just not true. My mom's ad I thought was very positive. I did ads with my wife. I did ads with my kids. All positive ads. I think we need reform. Let's get the money out, but on both sides. You learn a lot watching TV, and I guess this has been a contentious conversation and political season. But I'm committed that if Senator Kreitlow wants to learn how to log roll after the debate or after the election or throw an axe or change a tire, I'm committed to helping you do all three of those things if you want.
My axe throwing is going to get pretty good in the next commercial.
It's hard for both of us, I think, to hear and see negative ads. I think both of us would welcome them being cleaned up. Republicans and Democrats and outside groups that have run ads against both of us. Nice to see them go away and see a cleaner approach to ads and campaigning.
And we come now to our one-minute closing statements by a toss of the coin. Sean Duffy goes first. Pat Kreitlow goes second. Mr. Duffy, you've got 60 seconds.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, the panel, and thank you, Mr. Kreitlow. The honor of my life outside of marrying my wife and having her six kids has been being your representative. This is the place that I love. This is the place that I've grown up, and these are the people that I know. I've been working my heart out, whether it is with a town hall in every county every year, doing coffees with your congressman, job fairs, sending a mobile office out, making sure I'm working just as hard as all of you are. I've been to our farms, our factories, and to our small businesses, and I'm committed that if you give me another 2 years, I'm going to continue the work to stimulate and grow our economy through private sector reforms that will allow our economy to grow and our hard-working Wisconsin families to get back to work. I got to tell you this. I'm committed with a $16 trillion debt and $1.2 trillion of deficits every year. I'm committed to working on sound plans that will put America on a trajectory to balance in our budget. On November 6th, I ask for your vote.
And Mr. Kreitlow, you have 60 seconds.
I've been working hard my whole life because that's all my parents could give me. They couldn't give me anything but a work ethic. And I used that to be first in my family, to graduate from college, to report stories in newsrooms around Wisconsin on what people in power were doing and what they weren't doing. And you see now why people are so frustrated, why this Congress has the lowest approval rating ever measured. They haven't done the things that this country is needing so much in terms of a real jobs agenda. Real middle-class tax relief, a bipartisan plan to cut the deficit, and protecting Medicare rather than trying to privatize it. We need a Congress that's committed to moving forward and not just saying the things that sound good. Congressman Duffy knows how to say the right things. He's got great quotes, but he's got a voting record, and the votes don't match the quotes. We need somebody whose story is better connected to yours, who understands the struggles you've gone through, and who will represent you, the people of northern and central and western Wisconsin, who deserve better from this Congress. And so I ask for your vote on November 6th.
And that concludes tonight's debate. Between the candidates for Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District, incumbent Republican Congressman Sean Duffy and his challenger, former Democratic State Senator Pat Kreitlow. I'm Glenn Mobert of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our panelists and sponsors, Robert Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald, Amy Flugsop
of WSAW-TV News Channel 7, and Melissa Langben of WAOW-TV Newsline 9. Thanks also to Eric Giordano, the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, Rick Ryer, Jane Richter, and Michael Leland of Wisconsin Public Radio, Theater Director Chris Berg, and Dean Keith Montgomery, and the entire staff at UW-Marathon County. You've been a great audience. Good night, everybody.